It's been said a lot, and we'll repeat it here, that the waning days of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we sure hope they are the waning days, feature a race between vaccinations and variants of the disease. We'll focus now on research out of OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University. OHSU researchers looked into the question of vaccine protection against variants and included people who'd been infected with COVID and later got vaccines. And it appears from this research that vaccines do provide some protection from variants, even for people already infected. Our guest is Dr. William Messer. He is both MD and PhD, an assistant professor of medicine working in the Division of Infectious Diseases at OHSU. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Just in a general sense, to a casual observer not doing research, it looks like we learn new things about COVID every day. How does it look to somebody on the inside doing research?
Well, it's kind of a flood of information, and it's hard to filter out sometimes what is truly new, novel, and important, and what is just perhaps an observation that may or may not be important the next day. But it's very similar, I would say, to the experience on the outside. It's even on the scientist side, it's sometimes hard to sort out what exactly it is that we need to be paying the most attention to and what are the most important developments.
Well, that actually provides a sense of relief to know that there's a flood of information on both sides of that line. So that's, we're all weeding through it, it sounds like. So is the work on vaccines for people previously infected one of several lines of research just for you and your team?
Yeah, so our team is really interested in a couple of fundamental questions, which are, how potent and broad protection provided by vaccination is against COVID-19, and then our other area of interest.
All right, we have silence on our end. Bill Messer, I don't know if you're on a cell phone or something, but we lost you. And it looks like we're going to try to call Bill Messer back. All righty. Unusual, but phone systems do that in our day and age. It's actually one of the frustrations we find. As we head further into the cell phone age, the reliability of our connections is a bit on the spotty side. So we're actually getting some equipment installed that we hope will actually give us an internet-to-internet connection and rather than through phone lines on either end. So that might actually improve what goes on. That equipment not installed yet, but is in the building. I've seen the box in our server room. So we are trying to make sure that we can get people reliably connected for our phone calls, for our interviews, because obviously we can't bring people into the studio, and people from Portland wouldn't be likely to show up here anyway. So we're going to keep ringing Bill Messer in Portland and find out what's happening with the research up there, which is under the title, Previously Infected Vaccinees Broadly Neutralize SARS-CoV-2 Variants. SARS-CoV-2, of course, the official name for what we call COVID-19. And no, there was not a COVID 1 through 18. It's just that we first knew of this in the year 2019. So that is the situation. We do have him back on the line. Hi, Dr. Messer.
Hello again.
All right. So where we left off was that a couple of questions we wanted to answer was how potent vaccine protection is just in general. And then what was the second part?
Natural immunity to COVID-19 following a natural infection, and then we study the intersection between the two, whether you have natural immunity and then get from a prior infection and then get vaccinated, or if you've been vaccinated and experience a breakthrough infection. How does that alter your immune system's ability to recognize and protect against infection going forward?
It was part of the concern coming into this that that we're past the rush, that people seem to be moving more slowly to get vaccines now?
That does appear to be the trend right now in Oregon and also nationwide. There are more vaccine slots available than there are people seeking vaccination, which is a change from earlier in the year.
From other research or your own, I mean, are there some trends emerging in people who have had COVID? Are they getting the vaccines? Are they not getting them because they've already been exposed? Is there some clear trend there?
You know, that's a really interesting question, and I haven't seen specific data regarding the number of people who have been previously infected who subsequently have sought vaccination. We have a population of previously infected people that we study in Portland, and I would say off the cuff, About 30% of those people who were naturally infected have confirmed for us that they have subsequently sought a vaccination, but it may be a higher number than that if we were to look overall. But in general, people who have had it once are not interested in getting it again and have a pretty low barrier to going and getting vaccinated if they believe that that offers additional protection against repeat infection.
Okay, so a greater incentive in a sense then.
If you want to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. So again, we're talking to Bill Messer at Oregon Health and Science University, OHSU, about research into vaccines versus variants, even in people who have already been exposed. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So talk about this particular research. What hypothesis did you put out there and how test it?
Well, the hypothesis was really based in the idea of boosting, which we're already familiar with in vaccination in other ways. Childhood vaccinations require a first dose and then a boost or multiple boosts, depending on what the vaccine was. And our hypothesis going into this was that a natural infection, well, the first thing that we observed was that following a natural infection, not everybody has a uniformly high antibody response. We saw everything from no antibody response in people who were asymptomatically or minimally ill, to very high antibody responses in people who were very sick. And so we knew going into this that there was no guarantee that a prior infection was actually going to give you good immunity to repeat infection. But we did think that there was a latent prime effect, or what we call first dose effect, where the immune system is now surveying and looking for something that looks like SARS-CoV-2 again, so that it can respond to it as quickly as possible. Even if there aren't a lot of antibodies around, the immune system probably still knows that it was there. And the hypothesis was that, well, what if you come at it with a fixed high dose of a stimulant like the vaccine? Will that bring everybody up to a higher level? And that was essentially what we saw, was that you could have a very variable immune response following your natural infection. But after vaccination, everybody, whether they had a lower response or a higher response to the natural infection, went even higher with vaccination. And so that was what we expected to see, and we were encouraged to see that that is indeed what happens, because I think it offers, as you said earlier, an incentive to people who have been previously infected. And the piece of information that is, I think, really important there is that our studies have found that if you were just previously infected, there really is no guarantee that you have had a vaccine-like immune response to that first infection, that you still may have a pretty low immunity to repeat exposure.
Interesting. So, is that common, or is that unusual for any disease?
Well, it's common. When we think about this in the laboratory, we think of about it as what we call a dose response relationship. And the basic idea is the more exposed you are to a bacteria or a virus that makes you ill, the sicker you'll get, the more of it you get. And often what comes along with that is also a stronger antibody response. So people who were nasal swab positive but maybe had a sniffle or a small cold may not have had as large a dose, and their immune system has not seen as much of the virus as someone who got sent to bed a week or more of fevers, cough, shortness of breath, all of the classical symptoms, who both saw more of the virus and more of the illness and therefore had more of an antibody response. And I do believe that this dose-response relationship really occurs in people. And I think that the spectrum of illness that we see in people reflects that dose-response relationship. And our immunity follows along behind that dose-response relationship most of the time.
I wouldn't be surprised if by this point people are thinking, wait, so what'd you do, expose people once they had the... And that, the answer is no, there was nothing quite like that. But how did go ahead and proceed?
We looked for people who had been vaccinated who said that they had been previously infected, or we've looked for people who were previously infected and said to them, hey, when you get vaccinated, we'd like to study your immune response. But we've really relied on what's happening out in the world to provide us our subjects for study.
So how then? I mean, what was the procedure in the actual research?
So So we did it a couple of ways. One large cohort that we did were actually people who work at OHSU who presented for vaccination, and when they presented for vaccination as part of their participation in the vaccine campaign, not as participation in research, we asked them, would you like to give us a little bit of blood before you get your vaccine? And then 2 weeks after you've had your vaccination, your second dose of your vaccine, we'd like to get a second sample of blood and look at the antibody titers in both of those groups. And then we went on to ask of those people who enrolled in our study, well, who of you have had PCR-proven SARS-CoV-2 infection before you got vaccinated and who didn't? And then we sorted those two groups out, people who had COVID before they were vaccinated and people who didn't, and we asked, how are their antibody responses different?
And what is an antibody titer?
So an antibody titer is a measurement of depending on how you do the test, the potency or the total amount of antibody that is specific for SARS-CoV-2 in your blood. So it's a measure of the quantity and potency of antibody in your blood.
Mm-hmm. And so so you got some pretty good responses, it sounds like, from the people who got vaccines.
Yes, we did. Both from people who got vaccines and then particularly in people who had COVID and then got vaccinated. That's where we saw the highest antibody levels.
So they might have actually been better protected from having been infected and from having the vaccine?
Yes, we believe that they have the potential to be even better protected.
So by the numbers then, I mean, how well does it appear that there is protection from the vaccines against the variants?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. I would lead by saying we don't really know yet what antibody level correlates with protection from a variant versus the original strain. We don't know either one of those absolute levels. Like if we say if you have a level higher than 500, that protects you from everything. We don't know what that level is. But in general, we can say, I think with a fair amount of confidence, the higher the level, the greater the degree of protection. And that is true for both the original strain and for the variants. In the laboratory, we can test people's antibodies against both the original strain and the variants, and we can offer a sense of what the levels are without being able to say what level you need to be absolutely protected.
Dr. Bill Messer, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Oregon Health and Science University, OHSU, in the Division of Infectious Diseases, talking about a study that is a pre-publication about previously infected vaccinees broadly neutralize SARS-CoV-2 variants. There's a whole, what was it, 10, 12 different people involved in this research?
Yeah, not a huge number, but these are actually fairly rare cases in general to find people who you can both prove had a prior infection and know exactly when they got vaccinated.
All right. So, and you can, we can still take some phone calls and emails if you're interested in pursuing what we're talking about in this research with Bill Messer. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. A small sample I see in this research, 30 people in all, 10 of them previously infected. I mean, for comfort, how much larger a sample would you have preferred to work with?
Well, I think that in general, more is always better. Although at some point it begins to overwhelm your laboratory's ability to do the work. But it would be nice to have somewhere around 100 people in each one of those groups to make a really extensive comparison. At some point the signal becomes clear, and even with as few as 10, I feel reasonably confident that we have a good sense of what the antibody response is going to be like in people who were previously infected. But it would be lovely to have had 100 people, and we're still recruiting and enrolling people and continuing to study this. So as we get more people, we may in fact report more results.
That was my next question, is whether you're continuing to take blood from people, and it sounds like the mm-hmm. answer is yes.
Yep. Yes, we definitely are. We don't feel like we think we have uncovered something really interesting. It would be nice to explain it with larger numbers to feel like we are making a more convincing case.
Well, I just described this as pre-publication. Is that still the case? Has this thing gone to where it's going to get published soon?
It is what we call under review. We submitted it to a leading journal. The journal sent some comments back to us. We have responded to those comments and today are sending it back to that journal. We consider that generally a good sign for publication. If they send it back to us and say, we'd like you to make changes, that's encouraging. When they send it back to you and say, we're not interested, that's when you know it's time to move on. But we didn't get that response. We got a response that was very favorable.
I imagine after years of research, you've learned to take some rejection in stride.
It comes with the territory, for sure.
So is there a bit of a crush, Dr. Messer, to do a lot of research fast? I mean, in part to understand COVID better before there's less of it around, and also to stay ahead of the race we described between vaccines and variants.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head in several ways. Yes, there is a real rush or crush to do this research. This is unprecedented because this research is informing public health decision-making in a way that, you know, I've not seen except during the HIV epidemic in the early 90s, which was before I even trained as a doctor. So there's a real rush to get this information out. And there is a tension between COVID being around right now and presenting an opportunity to study it in real time versus what I think is a greater good, COVID receding. Sure, we don't have as many people to study, but from a public health perspective, and for that matter, from a national health and sense of well-being perspective, that's a greater good. I'm not sorry to see the number of subjects we have to study diminishing at all.
Is there any sense at this point of having learned things from the research into this pandemic that will help with the next one? Or is it too early because you're still focused on what you have to deal with COVID-19?
I think the biggest lesson that we learned from this pandemic is our capacity to generate at scale an enormous amount of scientific information that can actually be used to, in this case, design, test, approve, and implement a vaccine strategy and control strategies in really less than 2 years. Just over a year, really, from when the pandemic hit the U.S. and we were vaccinating people. I think that capacity and the capacity to do that was both unprecedented and to a certain degree unimagined. I think that we'll be able to respond better, assuming we maintain the capacity to do that, when this inevitably happens again.
Right, because as we pointed out, with lots of things that go on in the world today, there are reasons to believe that we'll get more zoonotic diseases that start in another animal and end up in humans. So that's what we're dealing with SARS-CoV-2, which of course we all lovingly call, and yes, I'm joking, COVID-19. There's nothing loving about COVID-19. Dr. Bill Messer, Assistant Professor of Medicine at OHSU in Portland, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about the research.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for the invitation to join you.